I'm Christian Corley, and joining me is Brian Terranova. Hi, Brian.
Hey, that's me.
It is you.
I do this thing with you, this podcast thing.
Yeah, that's what we're doing now.
That's what we do. Oh, we're doing it now?
Yeah.
Right. I'll wait for my intro then.
Right now.
Oh, that was. You know what? Yeah. Let's just do this.
You want me to start again?
No, I like that.
Okay. Do you know? We're here, dear listener, obviously, to talk about World Enough in Time, which features the return, the long-awaited return of John Simmons, the Master. And, you know, and over the last couple of weeks, we've been referring to the fact that we've been doing this 10 years, this podcast 10 years. Brian and I started it in 2007, talking about episodes with the Master in.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Did we really?
Yeah.
Wow, that makes sense. Well, quite right, because that would be 2007.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's been a few days ago, I think it was the 10th anniversary of the Series 3 finale, I think, or something's going on with Utopia or something. One of those came along the other day, anyway. So it's all nicely kind of anniversary in history and harking back to things in a way which Stephen Moffat hasn't exactly shied away from over the years.
Do you think that Stephen Moffat planned that for us? He said, you know what? Those great guys at Beyond Cerberus, it's their anniversary. Let's give them something special.
No,
but
I don't.
In a Scottish accent.
With a Scottish accent in a microphone-shaped head. No, I don't. But I do think that... we talked about this many times since... Certainly since 2013, the mining of the classic series for... repurposing in Moffat's Doctor Who, specifically in the Capaldi era. We've got the original Cybermen in World Enough in Time.
Yeah.
We've got the last version of the Master. We've got a opening which shows the Doctor regenerating in a very snowy place. We've got a trailer for next week's episode, The Doctor Falls, which bears more than a bit of resemblance to... the War Games, in terms of different scenarios, which have already been cued to us in the opening shots of World Enough and World Enough in Time, of there being different worlds within the spaceship. So it's all very, but you know, let's get into World Enough in Time.
Well, you've also got a plot, well, sort of a plot, but basically a premise, probably more so, from a very recent season. Yeah, Series 8. You got Missy and the Cybermen back.
Yeah. Oh, and also you got the Master doing it with a ridiculous disguise as well.
Well, yeah, that's
good. So, World Enough and Time, Episode 11 of Doctor Who Series 10. We are nearly at the end. Brian, there's so much to talk about with this episode. Overall thoughts, I was pretty pleased that the series seemed to have been reverted back to the quality of the first half. Agree? Disagree?
Yeah, you know, I was very surprised, especially since, you know, this is, it's going to sound terrible to say it that way, but especially since this is another Moffat episode. I was very concerned. And in fairness, I do remember going back to Series 8, liking the first part of the series finale of Series 8.
Dark Horse.
And then being, right, that one, and then being let down with Part 2. So anything can happen with Part 2. I haven't seen the trailer. I'm very hopeful because this first part was good. A couple of minor things that I just thought, wish they didn't do that or wish that was a little bit different. But there was so much to enjoy in it, I felt. I thought it worked really well. Curious to see where they're going with it, since it's a ship from Mundas and not actually dealing with the planet itself. That's a little weird. I don't know if he's trying to rewrite the Cybermen history completely or if he's just making stuff happen to Mundasians, period. So I'm real curious to see where it goes, which is a good thing, of course.
Absolutely, yeah. I think... I mean, there's been lots of talk and speculation about it. It's probably some sort of parallel thing, but, you know.
Which is fine, because, you know, okay, I've been saying throughout all the podcasts this entire season that I was hoping that Stephen Moffat would go with my idea for how to reconcile the Russell T. Davis Cybermen with the original Mundas Cybermen, and even Moffat's own Cybermen from his own era. And I've never really, like, hinted at it. or rather explained it throughout this series of our podcast. I'm sure I mentioned it in the past, but I had this theory and I think it just works great for the show. And I'm really, really hoping this is where he goes with it. Is that Mandassians, you know, we know that they were the 10th planet from, you know, all the way back in, what was that, 1965?
66.
66. We know that that was
Earth's twin planet, yeah.
Exactly, Earth's twin planet. And even like the big Finnish radio plays and so on, and even in that particular story, they talk about how they were human-like and that they had a similar culture and so on. And basically, even within the 10th planet, when they show Mundas, it's basically just the globe upside down. So it's our planet with all the same continental shapes, just upside down. So my premise was that Mundasians are humans, and humans are Mundasians, and that Mundas is actually just Earth from a parallel dimension. And the reason that Earth had a twin planet in our solar system that drifted away is because this version of Earth, which was called Mundas in that universe, slipped from its dimension into ours and became a twin planet to Earth and then drifted out of our solar system and forcing them to have the need to get their cybernetic parts and so on. This would, of course, also explain Russell T. Davis's version of events where humans became Cybermen in series two. Because obviously we know that that was a parallel Earth already. But then what Stephen Moffat could be doing with his Cybermen and Russell's Cybermen and the original Cybermen is throwing that idea out there and making it canon. And to me, like, I generally don't like when we take an alien from the past and try and marry them to something else. Like, for instance, this is probably a bad example, but oh, here's a great example. When people try and say that the War Chief from the War Games is the Master. I don't like that. I think the War Chief should stand on his own two legs as his own character, same as the monk when they try and do that. But in this case, having Mundasians be humans, I think that's really interesting because they already made them be virtually human. You know, like they want to make humans be like them. They had a similar background. It's already there. Their planet is a twin to ours. It's already written in there. And seeing that humans can just have a fate like we've seen in Doctor Who and in the long history of Doctor Who, that generally humans never die out. They're always out there in our version of the universe. They're always out there. They're always expanding. They may hit some hardships, but they're always out there. But then you can see that other versions of reality, they might turn into the Cybermen. And that intrigues me. I think it's a really great way to marry it all and explain it all. And that's where I hope he's going. I don't know if that's where he is. And I don't know if you, Christian, or even the listener cares for the idea, but I am really excited if that's where he's headed.
Okay. Interesting. I mean, obviously, you may know this, you may not know, the legends of there being a twin planet to Earth go back into the depths of time. Now, that's one of those 1960s, 70s things that, where there's a lot of mining of, conspiracy theories and ancient astronaut stuff, the Eric von Däniken things, which I wrote about briefly covered in an article in Celestial Toy Room when was it? Was it last year? I think it was last year in 2016 when I was asked to contribute. So, yes, that is interesting. Yeah, this is good stuff there, Brian. Yeah, I think I'd agree.
Cool.
Obviously, the episode has a... Right, I tell you, before we go on to that, John Sim is probably the big thing about this episode. I think it's a bit of a shame that we found out that he was going to be in it.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
You know, you don't see his face until the last couple of minutes, so...
Right. I do have to say, I mean, not to cut you off, you finish your thought now.
Well, yeah, I just think it would have been good if they'd been able to keep that under wraps, because they either can't keep stuff under wraps or they don't want to keep stuff under wraps, stuff that they probably should keep under wraps.
Well, didn't we just talk about this recently where, like, you know, for after episode one of series one, Christopher Eccleston was outed as leaving the show, you know, and it seems like whenever a doctor is leaving, like, they can't seem to keep that under wraps, but whoever's going to be the new doctor, they're pretty good at hiding that.
It's like the agents are petrified. They're never going to work again.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's very weird. But it is a shame that they mentioned that he was going to be back. Maybe they were afraid. I mean, in this world of information, and anybody can have something and leak that information, and it could get out there, and it could be a rumor. And we may have talked about this too, or I was talking about this with other people. But it could be like how Benedict Cumberbatch was announced for Star Trek, not Beyond, Into Darkness. And they kept saying left, right, and sideways that he wasn't Khan because they didn't want that surprise ruined. But in the end, it was so obvious they should have just said, yes, it was Khan, because they just ticked off a lot of fans, you know, who sat there and went, oh, I was hoping for a big surprise. But instead, it was the thing we already knew that you kept telling us it wasn't. Like, and wasn't, I think even Stephen Moffat did that at one point to us. The doctor's not dead. The doctor's dead. This is a real death. He's actually dead. It's absolutely real. But no, it was just the doctor in a robot body.
In a doctor
so he
suit.
Wasn't really dead.
The doctor in a doctor suit. The doctor cosplaying himself.
So maybe they're just like saying, look, if the information is getting out there, just tell them it's out there. This way, we're not telling people it's not true and they can't be mad at us for that. And hey, whatever, the you know, surprise got spoiled.
Well, you know, that Star Trek movie, I spent the entire movie before the reveal thinking, well, if he's not Khan, this is a bit of a dull movie, actually.
And I think we talked about this before, that it would have been really great if he wasn't Khan. If in this version of reality, if one of Khan's secondhand officers were woken up instead and they just chose to pretend that they were Khan. The only issue with that is, again, in the world of information that we currently live in, I find it hard to believe that Kirk and Spock couldn't pull up the internet and figure out what Khan really looked like. But, you know, it's just it would have been more interesting in that respect that way, you know. But here, I was trying to ask myself this, because when I saw the character, there were two things going on when John Sim first appeared as the character in the hospital. To me, it definitely looked like a person in heavy makeup.
Yeah.
So, but that doesn't really mean anything. In Doctor Who, many people wear heavy makeup, so it could have been any old person that they wanted to look old and weird and so on. But once that accent came out, once it wasn't just a regular British accent, they went with a very specific thing. You know, it was easy to see that it was John Sim and understand that it was John Sim if you knew John Sim, or if you even knew for sure, of course, like we did, that he was going to be in the episode. But I didn't mind it, because in the same way, going back to Castrovalva, I knew the Portreeve was Anthony Ainley. But it was a damn good performance. You know, he could have been Anthony Ainley playing a secondary character in that story, and I would have been okay with that, even if he was still the master in that story too. Because, you know, some actors do that. Some actors have played dual roles that were not the same character, and I don't mind that. But it was something easy for me to pinpoint. But it didn't take away from it, because I was sitting there thinking the entire time, like, oh, yeah, it's the master and he's in a disguise. Like, when was the last time we had that? That is so great. But it was a great performance. My wife doesn't really know John Sim, and she just loved the character. That was like one of her favorite aspects of the story. And that's just a testament to, number one, the writing, but number two, John Sim's performance for that character. And I really got to hand it to him, because I, you know, you and I have loved his work, certainly since Life on Mars.
Yeah.
But he's just extremely talented, that man. He does a great job in everything.
He does. It's a shame he's not on TV more, to be honest with you, these days.
Yeah.
Because there's absolutely. He was really good. And then you got the reveal with the goatee and the black suit.
Yeah. Everything, though, not like just the costume, but even his portrayal of the master at this point in his life. It was such a short screen time. It reminded me of the very short time Derek Jacobi had to be in the role right here at the end of this story. Because I am one of the ones who does like John Sim as the master in Russell T. Davis's era. I did think that, you know, some of it was a little over the top, but, you know, I liked him. But here, he really felt more masterly to me in just those few moments. And
it could be argued that standing in a field for what could have been several months is over the top as well, dressed as a scarecrow. So, you know.
Yeah, fair. Yes.
Every era is guilty of going over the top with the master. We need to talk about the master's timeline, I think.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are, from what I understand, they're a bit baffled as to where the master comes in. It's got to be post the end of time, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because if it's before that, he's dead. And if it's before Last of the Time Lords, he's locked between Earth and Utopia, isn't he? So he can only travel to those two locations.
Yeah. So it's post End of Time for sure. I mean, number one, you look at his, he's got the beard, he's got gray in his hair and the beard. You know, he's older. It's definitely after that. And are they going to tell us how he escaped there? No, probably not. But no, it's the master. That really matter? Because they never told us how the master actually escaped things. You know, it's like the one kind of area where a non-explanation in the show is actually okay, because it's built into the character that they just never tell us how he survives.
Yeah. Exactly.
And him and Michelle Gomez playing off of each other too, even again, just the short time that we saw, because like we were always saying with Michelle Gomez, she was the shining point in some bad stories when she was there usually. So it was great to see the two of them have that scene. The way that scene played out, I want to know why Missy doesn't remember him.
Yeah.
I really want to understand that. So I hope that gets a little bit of an explanation, but I thought it was really, really cool. I thought that played out very well.
It might just be that proximity thing.
Could be. And it could also be, this is a silly thing that, you get to series three when the doctor says that he'll know the master because he'll just feel it. He'll sense it. You know, he knows he'll be there. But obviously he didn't guess Professor Yana, obviously, because he was human at that point. And then he didn't get John Sim because he had the Archangel Network masking him. Fine. But how does that explain the entire classic series anytime the Master wore a disguise and the Doctor just didn't know it was him? You know, so maybe there is something. Maybe there is some way. Like, maybe the Doctor has to see something in their actual face to be able to tell if it's really them. But when you put a mask on, you can't tell if it's really them.
Maybe, yeah.
It's a silly thought. It doesn't make any sense. Basically, but there just may be like you and I can look at each other and we know who each other are because we know each other's face. Maybe Time Lords have a way of recognizing each other, even if their faces are different through a generation, it's still, quote, the same face to them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's something within there that they can see and recognize. But if you put a mask or a hood on, you're not going to know that's that person underneath. It's the only way to reconcile the past, in my opinion, with the current understanding of how the Doctor could recognize the Master.
Although that doesn't explain why he doesn't recognize Missy.
No. But he did say, wait, who doesn't recognize? Oh, the Doctor?
The Doctor in Death in Heaven, yeah. Dark
Water. No, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Unless there is an explanation of why she's a woman now.
Or maybe it's because she's out of sync as well.
Maybe. Or
because that could be happening after this. We don't know yet.
Well, my thought for all of this was that one of the main reasons for bringing John Sim back was to actually do the regeneration between the Master and Missy, because there's two things that the show had never really done before, and that's have a multi-master story or have a multi-regeneration story.
Multi-master sounds like we're perusing the shelves of a hardware store.
This is a different podcast now.
It is, yes.
But no, I had thought that's where they were going to go. But, you know, there is another kind of possibility, too. I mean, obviously, we've seen in the show that Time Lords can regenerate between sexes. So, it doesn't even have to be explained that it's an oddity in here, and that's why he doesn't remember it. But what if it's something more akin to the Doctor in the Valyard? What if there's some kind of split going on here with the Master and Missy? Or what if something that happens at the end of this episode to make the Master regenerate kind of wipes his memory of like Missy, when Missy becomes Missy, remembering who John Sim was?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's got to be something. And usually we know that when there are multi-doctor stories, that whoever is the current doctor in the situation remembers the events that had happened, or at least that's how we understood it, whereas any of the others that were younger than him will go back to their lives forgetting they had that multi-experience. But even then, Missy would still be the current incumbent.
She would be the one who remembers
it,
wouldn't she?
Yeah,
he'd be the one
exactly.
Oh, God, this makes it complicated. Well, listen,
no, but it wouldn't. It wouldn't. No, that would actually work, though, because
work?
If Missy regenerated at the end of the story, or rather if John Sim regenerated into Michelle Gomez, then Michelle Gomez would still be the past version of the Master at that point, and she would still kind of forget what was going on. But why would she forget the last face that she just had? She would forget the meeting. But yeah. Why would she forget that face? So yeah, no, I don't know. There's stuff to be explained in the next episode, which my feeling is not going to get explained, but it would be nice to see.
Well, listen, why do we think the Master's there? I mean, he must have been there a while.
Well, clearly,
or he's taking over, because you know he had the mask on. Has he got the mask on for other people's benefit? Has he hypnotized everyone else on the ship?
Maybe
he was on Mondas and he's been on the ship the whole time with the other people.
Or what if he's the reason? What if he took these people specifically?
Well, I think the people that were took, they weren't really took, were they? It took them too long to get back, so they stayed and bred, and they're all the dots, aren't they? Because this is the other thing about this episode. Is that it's a hard science fiction concept, which is rare in Doctor Who.
Right.
So you've got this giant spaceship reversing away from a black hole. The part where the Doctor and friends have dematerialized, that's where time is passing the slowest.
Right.
The other end, where Bill ends up after she's taken, that's where time is, in a nice nod to the pirate planet, by the way, I noticed, the elevators, with their inertia cancellation effect. The other end of the ship is the where time is passing at the normal pace.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had trouble with this because I thought it was the other way round, and I thought that they'd got the bridge of the ship in the wrong place. But given it some thought, I'm now au fait with it. I'm now there. It does make sense, and it's really good to have something like that in Doctor Who on the TV, because that's Star Trek: The Next Generation level hard science.
Yeah. Well, it's actually Stargate SG-1.
Okay.
Because they did that episode already. It wasn't with a spaceship. They had as a way to kind of try to destroy the Stargate headquarters, they had the Stargate, the Goa Wolf anyway, had the Stargate lock onto a black hole or a planet that was destroyed and becoming a black hole. And they were trying to save some of their crew from that planet. But on the planet, time was going super slow, whereas back home, like, days and weeks were passing while they were trying to save the people on the other end.
Right.
And it took me, to be honest, until just before this podcast to remember that, because when I was watching the episode last night, I like the concept and I see no reason why another science fiction show or movie couldn't use the concept, because it's a true scientific theory. It should be used by many, but I knew that I had seen it before and it was just killing me trying to figure out where it was. And I just got it, that it was in Stargate SG-1, but yeah, no, it is a great concept. And I thought it was used well. And you know, really, really the only thing about that was, with Bill, having lived there for a couple of years, I think they really probably should have made her character and demeanor and so on be a little bit different. Like, after so many years, like, I mean, she's still clinging to hope of the Doctor, and maybe that's what kept her going. But I would think that after being stuck there a couple of years, I personally would probably be like, look, he's taking forever just to scratch his nose. There's no way he's coming to save me before I'm 50. You know what I mean? Like, I would probably start, like, becoming, complacent. This is my life. What else can I do? Either that, or else I'd be trying to run for those elevators at any given chance that I had gotten. But, you know, that's a minor complaint, because it was still very well done.
Agreed. Now, what about Cyber Bill?
That's something, because Stephen Moffat had said that Bill was in for some dark times this season. And I remember laughing that off in the beginning, because my initial thought when I heard that was, yeah, who wasn't, you know, in the new series of Doctor Who, every companion's in for some dark times. But it did start making me wonder, we know that she's doing only one series. And I thought, like, could this be one of the most interesting Doctor Who's, where the companion actually does die? She becomes a Cyberman in the second to last episode of a series. And that's literally it. Like, we can't save her. Or is there going to be some timey-wimey stuff going on and a Doctor does what he couldn't do for Adric and save Bill? You know, like what's going to happen? Because the next episode can definitely make or break this story. And, you know, I'm not saying that saving Bill would immediately make it be bad, but it would have to be damn good, you know? And obviously we all want the companion to survive. It's not like I'm lobbying for companion deaths, and I like Bill and I don't really want to see her turn into a Cyberman, but it would definitely be an interesting concept. Because the other thing I thought too, kind of skipping ahead on one of the other topics I'm sure we're going to hit, is they show us, like you had mentioned in the beginning, the Doctor starting to regenerate.
Which they've only recorded recently, apparently.
Well, that's exactly what I was just going to say. There were two things that I was wondering about that. Like they keep telling us that, you know, Capaldi's in for the Christmas episode, and then it's Chris Chibnall. And one of my first thoughts was, if you can't keep secret when the Doctor is going to regenerate, that he's going to regenerate, that somebody else is coming in, what could you keep secret? Like, tell people it's going to be at Christmas time, but then actually put it at the end of Series 10 and have the Christmas episode truly be a Chibnall story? I thought that would be really interesting, but the only thing that does ruin that is, you know, Capaldi's hair in the beginning of the regeneration scene does not match the episode at all. It matches how he looks now, which is what it looks like when they're filming the Christmas story.
It looks like Paul McGann's hair 20 years ago.
Right,
in the,
right.
The initial publicity shots for the TV movie, only gray. Yeah. White.
So it does put a damper on that thought. But I thought, man, like, what an interesting way to end the series. You kill the companion one episode before the final story, and then you actually make the Doctor regenerate in a story that we didn't think he was going to regenerate in. And obviously that's not how it's going to be, but I thought, man, that would have been a way to get us all. You know, that really would have been a way to get us all.
Yeah.
But it is curious, because now it does bring up a question. They show him starting to regenerate at the beginning of this episode. Does that mean by the end of episode 2, he's going to have like a long regeneration like the 10th Doctor did? You know, is that what's going to happen? Or did they just throw that teaser in there at the beginning for no reason and we have to wait till Christmas? Or is the Christmas episode connected?
There's some regeneration energy in the trailer for part 2, The Doctor Falls. And it is called The Doctor Falls. So,
yeah.
Who?
But I still swear Sim's going to regenerate too.
Yeah. Well, I don't want him to. I'd be disappointed if he does, because...
I don't want him to either, but I can't see Moff missing that opportunity.
There he is back on the show after 7 years, and this is if he hasn't been anywhere.
Yeah.
How did you feel about the cliffhanger? It's the actual format? Because I felt it was a bit... I think it's probably because the two locations were linked. I think in the past, when Doctor Who's done kind of... snowball cliffhangers, they've worked because the people have been in different places,
right?
But because everything was happening in the same location, you haven't just got the Master reveal, you've got the Master reveal, then you've got the fact that Bill's a Cyberman, and then you've got the Master and Missy strolling in all arch stating it's the genesis of the Cybermen. It just felt like it could have been a bit of a better cliffhanger to me if it was all in there in the same place, and it kind of lost the Bill bit, lost its impact, and the Master bit lost its impact because they were bundled together.
Yeah, I don't know. To be honest, I didn't mind it. I don't recall thinking it was too much. I did keep thinking while watching it, like, is this it? Is this it? Because they just kept having moments that was like, this is the end. No, okay. Is this the cliffhanger? Is how I felt when I was watching it. No, I didn't mind it. I see what you're saying, though, and I do think that it could have just worked with that Cyberman coming at him and him realizing it was Bill somehow. But I do like that the Masters both got a moment with the Doctor there and then got to like flaunt in his face basically that was Bill. You know, on that though, do you think? You know, we see that throughout Series 10, the Doctor is trying to make Missy become a good guy. And, you know, we've all been thinking, oh, it's just going to fail. It's the Master. It's a ruse. The Master wants out of that box. You know, like this isn't going to work. Missy's not going to be a good guy. But do you think somehow, some way, that's what's actually going to happen in the next story, that Missy is going to help the Doctor stop John Sim?
I don't know. It's
rather than
to
actually
say.
Side with Sim.
Yeah, yeah, it's difficult to say. I mean, we don't know much from the trailer. I mean, how much did we see from this week's trailer? And you know, you get this entirely different story just sprawling out, opening up before you. It's a 60-minute episode as well, so we've seen like 30 seconds of that.
How long was this one?
This one was 45,
longer, wasn't it?
Oh, it was supposed to be in the normal time. space.
Yeah, the next it is 45, you're right.
Yeah, but the next episode's 60 minutes long, so there's more going on in the next episode as well. I think I would, as much as I like Bill, I think it would lessen, and we've talked about the minor impact of death in Moffat's era of Doctor Who.
Right.
In the past, like the only people who ever die of old age being Amy and Rory and River Song. Clara's miraculously revived. Rory miraculously revived through the various means he was survived back then. And then, you know, Clara's other deaths as well, to be, you know, a splinter. So all that silliness there. If Bill dies, then that kind of solidifies the fact that death means something. Oh, and then you've got Danny as well, who died but came back as a Cyberman.
I was just going to mention that because I wanted to talk about the similarities between this story and Dark Water. And I was hoping that this Moffat just kind of figured, like, oh, maybe they'll just forget that other story if this one's really good and I won't go down those same tropes. But it is too similar. You have Missy, who was in control of the Cybermen, trying to make an army for the Doctor, and then turns Clara's boyfriend into a Cyberman, who was a running character throughout Series 8, if not a companion. And then here we have John Sim, you know, making the Cybermen, or at least being a part of their creation in some way, and then Bill getting turned into a Cyberman, and Missy is still there. And there's too many similarities, which is a shame considering there's only one series of separation between them.
Yeah.
You know, but I do agree. That's why I was saying, as much as I like Bill, we do know that she can't go on to the Chibnall era, or at least that they didn't want her to. They had other designs. We know that she was a one series companion, or at least that's the belief, or we're led to believe anyway.
Told.
So if that's the case, I mean, not everybody needs to have a happy ending. And it seems like, as much as they tried to make everybody seem like they had a tragic end, they took it away for everybody, certainly in the Moff era. Like, the only person who had a tragic end was Danny.
Yeah.
You know, and it would be nice to see there are some consequences to traveling with the Doctor. Especially, it would really be nice to see that he doesn't break that rule of, you know, someone died, but don't worry, I'm the Doctor, we can go back and save them. You know, it's just, there's too much of that now. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, there's the other side of it as well, which is the Cyberman side of it. Because if you've gone to the trouble of more or less reviving the Cybermen's reputation, you know, you've got this excellent episode in which the full horror of what a Cyberman really is has just been restated for really the first time in 50 years.
Yeah.
51 years. To go to the trouble of doing that and making the Cybermen a real force, and then to kind of show that conversion can be undone.
Yeah.
Because in the special case, it's a companion. That kind of, so like, in my view, that takes the hard work of reviving the Cybermen's reputation and just, like, dances on it.
Yeah.
I mean, go on.
No, I absolutely agree with you there. I do think that if you become a Cyberman, that should be final, and that should be the end. Like, I mean, the Doctor couldn't save... Well, number one, there was no saving Jackie if they could find her. She was just a brain in a jar. How do you save somebody if they've got no body, kind of thing? The Doctor even knew with the woman who was Sally. Wasn't that her name, Sally? She was the wife, the bride, rather, on her wedding day. Had to just kill that one. And he knew all the other humans. The only way to stop the Cybermen, to stop their pain, was to destroy them all. And, you know, maybe he's learned something. Maybe he has found a way to go ahead and reverse engineer a Cyberman. But my feelings are, even if they do that, even if somehow he can get her out of that case and make her again, which is something that I do find annoying, because after watching one episode of Class and the Doctor can go ahead and give that guy a new cybernetic leg, you know, it does seem like we were saying, there's absolutely no consequences now to traveling in space. What I would like to see is, if we're going to save Bill, have her go back to Earth with a cybernetic heart. Maybe he can make it more impressive than that early Cyberman tech that she had in this particular story, but have it be that, hey, you know, I'm sorry, I should have protected you better. You've got your life, but you're not like you were. And that's the tragedy for her story, that while she's got her life, you know, she never will have her heart again. She's not human in that way, and she'll come to terms with that, and she'll live a normal, happy life, essentially, as normal as you can without having to go to a hospital to get a chest x-ray and have everybody find your secret, you know? But I think that would be something I could live with if the doctor, like, if maybe she's at this point just in a suit still as she is, but, like, with cybernetic implants in her brain or something. But, yeah, I wouldn't want to see them, like, take her and make her completely human and perfect again. I think there needs to be some consequences to what happened in this story. The other thing I was going to say was that this story... do you remember back in 2006
when... Time ago.
Right? Too long. Before we were podcasting, so people only had to read about this on our website at the time, or in our forums. But basically, when we were talking about how Russell T. Davis said that this is 2006, people aren't afraid of getting replacement body parts anymore. They aren't afraid of that. You know, they're afraid of technology consuming them. We know that technology is going to consume us. And so the Cybermen in The Rise of the Cybermen, The Age of Steel were... you know, a world obsessed with technology that let themselves basically be led like lambs to the slaughter because they just wanted that new upgrade. And it seemed a fine concept, but it wasn't terrifying to me. Watching this story, watching these people and how they're in pain and how they're suffering just to survive, I never once felt in 2006 that Russell was right with his updated version of the concept for why the Cybermen came to be and why the 1960s version was outdated in belief now. And this story just proves it, you know, because we're 11 years on from that Cybermen story. And this story proves that it is a creepy concept. And it's terrifying to think that we could get there once we destroy all our resources on this planet and we need to find other ways to survive. And I was really glad to see that that worked. Really glad to see that Moffitt's writing in this story and concepts and everything, everything's working. It's all in the right place thinking. There was only one area that I wish they didn't do, but it did come back to pay off well. But I had thought it took me out of the moment at first, and I didn't like it. But we can talk about that later.
Yeah, maybe.
We're on this subject right now. But anyway.
We probably won't run out of resources, but we probably will find that we're unable to reach the resources that we're currently using at the moment because they become further away from us into the Earth. And we're not currently able to drill particularly deep into the Earth's surface through the Earth's crust. Yeah. It's a nice little callback. Anyone there listening can go and dig out one of our many podcasts about Inferno. Always worth it.
Oh my God. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, and actually, if you are, dear listener, in the mood to be generous, you could go to our Facebook page and like us. That's facebook.com/podcasterberus. Don't know why, it just is. And if you are feeling even more charitable, we would be honoured if you would leave us a review on iTunes. That would be grand. Proper grand. If you weren't aware of our Facebook presence, we have many of you, dear listener, on there then who've been contributing to this podcast, really. Well, they don't know it. Or rather, they haven't yet, but they're about to now. So I'm going to... Yeah, basically, I'm going to the Facebook page. Rich Goldtree, scary Cybermen, about time. However, a slight feeling Moffat is again inserting his own characters into key events in Who history, Brian. This is one of your bugbears.
Yeah, no, that was that's one of the things I said in the beginning of the podcast. That was a concern of mine, being that is Moffat trying to say that the Mundas Cybermen all started on this spaceship, or is, you know, I am okay if it is just another branch of Mundasians on this spaceship and the same things happening to them here. I just don't want to see, you know, we know Earth had a twin, we know Mundas was there, we know Cybermen were there. Although, to be honest, while I don't like how Moff usually rewrites Doctor Who history, I am kind of okay with the concept of the Cybermen starting on this spaceship and then returning to the home planet and bringing it there. I can kind of be okay with that, but we were told before that they were dying on that planet. Uh-huh. It would only make sense if the planet was still, the people were still dying because of the resources on that planet. And well, the Cybermen on that ship said, hey, we got to go save our brethren.
They've had, like, however long in years since they went down there, several hundred years, wasn't it, since they went, the people checking the ship went down to the bottom of the ship, realized that they couldn't get back and started breeding, building a civilization with technology and everything like that. So it's not beyond, you know, what we've done in the past few hundred years. What they're doing isn't beyond that time scale.
Right. True.
So yeah, and we know that the ship's big enough to hold different types of landscapes. So presumably within those landscapes there will be various resources, etc. Gareth Lloyd, not a fan of this episode. He says it seemed like a pointless build up to a climax we'd already seen. And as for the "I'm Doctor Who" and "Genesis of the Cybermen" dialogue, is Moffat at his irritatingly self-congratulatory worst?
Yeah, admittedly, the Doctor Who bit was annoying to me.
Well, I am a believer in, you know, textures in TV and movies, and you've got to have lightness for the darkness to work later on. Often that isn't what's happening in Moffat's Doctor Who's. It's often a lot of twee silliness just for the sake of looking clever. But I think it works here because it is needed for how things turn out later on. Tom Ford, really enjoyed it. Loved the pacing of the body horror. It felt like a callback to 40 odd years ago. 50 odd. Let's face it though, we all knew it was him early on, didn't we?
Yeah.
I thought it was, but I spent a lot of time looking at him really carefully rather than listening.
Oh, really, really, yeah.
Just looking at his eyes.
I must have watched Life on Mars so much because I could tell from his mouth movements and some of his body language as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something I haven't watched for a while, actually. Life on Mars. Yeah, there's some ideas brewing in my head right now. Yes, Life on Mars. The bit with the Cybermen, Nick Caulfield is referring to the bit with the patients shouting pain or pressing the buttons in that Stephen Hawking sort of a way, which cleverly foreshadows the sing-song cyber voice that Bill has at the end. That's a really good... that's one of Moffat's best scenes, I think, in Doctor Who.
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely a lot of well-played moments like that in this story. That's one of the things that saved it. Like, there wasn't time in this story to do over-the-top, ridiculous things like he's the president of the planet in a time of need and so on. You know, like most of it really just worked. You know, like I said, minor niggles here or there, but most of it did really well. So I would agree with that one, yeah.
Excellent. Now, something else that we've done is, and thanks to all of you for sending us your comments, and they are appreciated as ever. Now, something else that we've done is throw a poll up on Twitter. Basically asking a very simple question. And I will find it in a moment. Honest, I will.
I don't think you will.
No, I will. Come on, where is it?
We're all waiting.
It's vanished. It's a poll that basically asks, is that it for Bill, or is she going to stay as a cyber person? And it should be right there. Why isn't it there? Why isn't it there? We've had we have had responses to this. And last time I looked, it was 50-50-ish both ways. I don't know why I can't find it. That's just craziness. Good Lord.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't see it here at all.
Yeah, that's so weird. There's been some great reactions to Cyber Bill. There's one that I retweeted a few hours ago. Coming soon from Big Finish, The Cyber Adventures of Bill Potts and the Brig. Written, directed, and starring only Nicholas Briggs.
Oh my God.
Which I think
that's
is absolutely
brilliant.
Fantastic. It's absolutely brilliant.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the Series 9 ending for you right there.
And there's another one, Gary Gillap, former Doctor Who magazine editor, shared a photo of Cyber Bill and Cyberwoman from Torchwood with the caption, "Cheer up, Cyber Bill, just wait till you get down the disco." So.
Oh. I gotta find that one. I don't see that one.
Now I went out earlier to a robot exhibition. There's a few at a local museum, and there were a few creatures in there that weren't robots, such as Cybermen and Daleks, and there was something else that wasn't a robot as well. What was it? Oh yeah, and a Sontaran's head as well. But one thing that there was a couple of small figurines of 1980 style Cybermen. And it made me realise that there's no 1980 style Cybermen in any of these trailers for the next episode.
You know, I haven't, I didn't watch the trailer. I didn't want to watch the trailer, okay. So I didn't see that. But that is a bit surprising.
I'm sad about it.
Yeah.
I am sad about it because.
What ones did we get in the trailer? Because the only ones that I am aware of from the promotional stuff that I've seen so far are the 10th Planet, the Russell T. Davis, and the Moffat one.
Yeah, that's it.
That's really it. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's a shame that we don't get any sprayed silver flight suits. And but Brian, you do a very good cyber leader, don't you?
Cyber leader. Yeah. Oh, that one. Oh, God.
Go on.
Excellent.
Thank you.
That guy, yes. I you know the joke. I always want to hear him like it's Bill and Cyber Controller's Excellent Adventures, you know, like, excellent, bogus, you know, like, that era of the Cybermen, it's a shame, like, the stories are okay, but why are the Cybermen that way? They shouldn't be that way. Oh my God, I just saw the disco one, that's great.
So, that's terrible. Yeah, I found the poll anyway. So the question, is that the end for Bill? 40% say she's well and truly cybered. 60% she'll be deconverted. So there's a lot of optimism that the Doctor will be able to undo the process, or someone will be able to undo the process.
Well, you know, that goes back to what I was saying. Will Missy help the Doctor? You know, will she show that she has that that good side that he's been trying to bring out? Will she help stop the Master? And maybe since she's got the technology to make the Cybermen in her head, having been John Sim, will she de-cybernize? Because isn't that a word they used in the 70s, Cybermen? Anyway, Bill. You know, could that be what Moffat is thinking? Could Moffat also be doing a different story altogether like he likes to do, where the next part is going to have nothing to do with this one except for the last minute when he's like, oh yeah, I'm the Doctor, I rewrote time. We'll find out. Tune in next week.
Well, yes. We are getting on for that. So, I mean, do you have any other predictions for next week? Because my prediction was that this was all doomed to fail. And it seems I'm wrong about this because we've seen the Doctor starting to regenerate. This is all doomed to fail, and that the only way to stop the Cybermen was to let the ship fall into the black hole.
Mm, yeah.
Event Horizon. We'd heard various things about there being various different Doctors in the Christmas special. Possible Doctors. Event Horizon. Possible Doctor. Possible realities for the Doctor, etc. Wakes up. New body. New universe. Blank slate. For the new producer.
Oh, I see. New universe. Yeah, okay. See that.
But it seems like it's not going that way.
Yeah, well, I've been trying to think how we could ever get the Doctor back to what he used to be, with not really like having stories where he would land on a planet and people wouldn't already know who he was, kind of thing. So I can see it being a new universe step. And, you know, I guess that could kind of work. I guess that could be okay. But I also am remembering going back to the beginning of this series where we were all starting to think, you know, the Doctor's been living on Earth for 50 years, watching this vault with Missy. And things just like, it seems so anticlimactic when you realize that it's Missy in the vault. When it was such an intriguing idea before. And then it's just, oh, it's just Missy, and you gave it to us super early. What if, like we were thinking a while back, or there was talk on the internet about, what if this isn't Earth, or at least not the Earth that we knew? What if the Earth that Bill is from is one of those ones that maybe was destined to go down the road of Cybermen anyway? You know, maybe this is, maybe everything we've been watching this season hasn't been the regular Earth that we already know. Now, the only things that kind of ruin that a little bit are the fact that we have the Doctor being the president of Earth.
Yeah.
But you know, he could have been, or a counterpart could have been that way on this particular Earth. I don't know. There's so many different ways that it could go, and there's so many bad ways that it could go, and it'll be interesting to see. My hope is just that part two keeps up the standard. But I would like to see some actual tragedy rather than, like, I don't want to see series nine where, you know, they kill Clara, but they don't kill Clara. Like, that ending, they wasted any kind of meaning behind her death in that series, and I just don't want to see that. And I'm okay with the fact that Clara, that Bill could be saved from being a Cyberman, but I just don't want to see it be a complete, like, hey, don't worry, you can travel with me anywhere, you can have your head cut off, Nardole, you can become a Cyberman, and I'll save you.
Yeah.
Everything will be fine. You know, there needs to be some weight to it, even if it means, you know, like I said, Bill has a mechanical heart, and then the Doctor regenerates. There needs to be something
against his will, by the look of things, as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the one thing that I thought with that in the beginning was, you know, I wonder if people will complain about this like they complained about David Tennant saying, I don't want to go. But then I also thought, man, years ago, for one of the fan film ideas that I had had, I thought there's one thing that they have never done in Doctor Who, and that was do a regeneration mid-story. You know, like, obviously you don't want to make a Doctor die or leave of the role before they actually have their final save. You know, you want to make their death mean something, you know, that they saved the day, but because they did it at a great consequence, and now they have to regenerate and leave. But I thought that rather than him sitting there saying, no, like, I don't want to regenerate, this isn't my time, I just thought, what if that's what it is? Like, he's got unfinished business. He's in the middle of trying to save the day, and he can't regenerate right now. Obviously, I don't envision for a second that they're going to make him regenerate and have the new Doctor come in and save the day, which is what was going to happen in my fan film concept. But we might see Capal doing basically what Tennant did, staving off his regeneration for as long as he can just to make sure he saves the day. Because the main concept for me, the main interest for me with the film that I was writing, was pretty much every time we've seen the Doctor regenerate, he doesn't come out of it perfect. He's not normal. He has to normalize. It's a very traumatizing effect when you change, when he changes. And I thought, man, wouldn't that be incredible to see a Doctor regenerate mid-story? The Daleks are about to destroy the world, and here he regenerates, and he's not himself. He's crazy. He's unconscious. He doesn't know what he's doing. Maybe he lost, like, we know he loses bits of information when he regenerates. It's just not there. Personality changes everything. How would that affect the current storyline going on if the Doctor had a mid-story regeneration? And I don't think that's where they're going, as I said. But it would be interesting to see how it would affect Peter Capaldi fighting off a regeneration, trying to save the day at the same time.
You know, there's something that we haven't seen so far, which has been teased prior to Series 10. And this is probably the last thing we'll talk about. So, gird your loins, dear listener. The Day of the Doctor.
Oh, right, yes.
We haven't seen that moment, which we were told we were going to see, weren't we? We were told it would link back to Capaldi's scene in The Day of the Doctor, which we haven't seen at any other point through his tenure as the Doctor. And this kind of brings me back to my other thing as well, which I was mentioning earlier. You know, this idea, this kind of slight similarity to the War Games in this finale. You won't know because you haven't seen the trailer. But, you know, there's lots of fighting going on in different landscapes, different zones of the ship. And then we've got, you know, so that's calling back to two prior regenerations. The 10th planet, which we see a snow-bound landscape that the Doctor lands on at the beginning of World Enough and Time. And then the War Games with the fighting in the time zones. And this idea of there being a link to the Day of the Doctor does make me wonder whether the Time Lords may be called.
Oh, I see. So like things get a little too heavy for him and he needs a helping hand.
Yeah.
Like the war games. Okay. But it wouldn't surprise me. And the main reason that wouldn't surprise me is because when Moffat doesn't know what else to do, he uses an old idea. And I, you know, and you know that I don't, I'm not even saying that to be rude because we talked about a million times how like Russell T. Davis and even going back as far as the Philip Hinchcliffe era where they used like Frankenstein, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and so on, you know, in those eras of the classic era, you know, like using old stories and old ideas and concepts and so on. But it does seem that Moffat keeps borrowing from the past, even himself. But I wouldn't be surprised by any of that, especially since the one concern that one of our listeners, whose name I had forgotten, had mentioned that it does seem like Moffat trying to rewrite himself as the creator of the original history again, which is always a fear for me whenever he does anything like this, an origin story of sorts. So that's why I'm a little cautious for next week's episode. But this one was good. I enjoyed
Yeah.
it. And I just hope that he can keep it going.
Now you'll have noticed, the listener, that James McLean is not with us this week. He's busy at his gentleman's club, no doubt. He has, however, had his butler leave a few notes on Facebook, in which he says, "I liked it. Sadly, as with Ainley, despite good acting and prosthetics, Sim is too distinctive to hide. But that I think was a given, and you had to go with it. Harking back to disguises was a nice touch after Davies had done the hypnosis and degeneration. Good to see the laser screwdriver back. Cybermen worked well, liked the story, good ideas. Back to the pacing of the original set of episodes." Which I think it means their first half of the series. "Missy was fun. Exposition and comic relief made me smile. Oh, postmodernism." And obviously I read that out, but no doubt you would have heard that in James's voice. I did anyway. So we are nearly at the end of Doctor Who series 10. We are two episodes away from the end of Stephen Moffat's era, two episodes away from the beginning of the Chris Chibnall era of Doctor Who. Sometime in the next two episodes of Doctor Who, we're going to be saying goodbye to Peter Capaldi and hello to someone else. We don't know who it is still at the moment. Are you up to date with who the various people are, Brian?
I've seen a lot of the names out there, but I'll be honest, a lot of them I am unfamiliar with.
Yeah, sure, yeah. There's been a few names bandied around. I've kind of contributed to a small list. Basically, there's a big list because someone said on Twitter, it's one of these people following this person, which is one of the most ridiculous things ever. Anyway, so this list, we managed to get it down to a certain length, and then I said, "Well, look, it's definitely not a woman. We know that, and we also have a very good indication that it's not going to be anyone over 40s. Very likely to be someone in their 30s," which then gives us an even shorter list of actors, which I'm going to pull up now in my usual prompt manner. Here we go. Now, if you're a regular, you probably know that I'm quite keen on the idea of Chris Marshall. I'm also quite keen on the idea of Aidan Turner, but it would seem that he's contracted to another two series of Poldark, so that seems unlikely as well. The age thing is because BBC apparently want someone with Tennant-esque appeal. Which gives us a list of six people from the list of Twitter accounts, which are Andrew Lee Potts, who was previously in Primeval, Tom Rosenthal, Ralph Little, Keith Jack, who is currently 29 but will be older than that when Series 11 comes around, James Buckley, again the same age, or James McKenzie, who's quite a bit older. He's kind of nearly 40, I think. Yeah, I mean that's only six names. There's many, 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 many names doing the rounds. So, you know, are you familiar with any of those people, Brian?
No, to be honest.
Excellent. Well, that's killed that one stone dead, hasn't it?
Sorry. I don't know why, to be honest. You'd think I would be more familiar with those names, but I'm just not.
So there you go. But, you know, it could be anyone. We're going to find out quite soon. It's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it usually is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
nerve-wracking, too. I don't know why, but yeah.
It is nerve-wracking. It's also sad.
Yeah.
Because I really like Peter Capaldi. And this year he's been absolutely even better. I mean, he's brilliant in everything. Every single scene, he's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to see more of him.
Yep. Yeah, so that brings us to the end of this week's podcast with a K, in which we discussed World Enough and Time, episode 11 of Doctor Who Series 10, and we look forward a little bit to The Doctor Falls, which we'll be talking about next week. We're going to play you out with a trailer from The Doctor Falls. Until next time, it's goodbye from Brian and I.
I'm not going to get out of this one, are we?
Cybermen are coming.
Who I am is where I stand is where I fall.
I will never stand with the Doctor.
Without hope, without witness, without reward, stand with me. It's all I've ever wanted.
Doctor Who, the series finale. On BBC One.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.